Welcome to the primary edition of your local talking newspaper, covering St Albans, Harpenden and all the villages within the district. I'm Jane, one of today's readers. You've just heard a piece of music, which is Music is My Medicine. We hope that you enjoyed listening to it. We'll be playing more of it a little later on. Today's is for week ending the 30th of November 2019. The news items come from the Hearts Advertiser and the Review. Here's my first news item. Work begins on rail freight. Work is finally underway on the strategic rail freight interchange in Park Street to prevent planning permission from lapsing during the consultation period. The rail freight terminal is proposed for Greenbelt land on the former Radler Aerodrome site, and developers Seagrow, previously known as Helioslough, have met with years of opposition from campaigners. A Seagrow spokesman said, "Following two public inquiries which fully explored the merits of the strategic rail freight scheme, the Secretary of State granted outline planning permission in 2014. Since then, we have engaged positively in the planning process in order to progress the scheme, and the recent works have been carried out to ensure the planning permission does not lapse while the next phases of public examination take place. We are aware that the draft local plan for St Albans is being reviewed and that the public examination is due to begin in January 2020. One of the many topics of debate will be the appropriate use of the site for which planning permission for the strategic freight terminal has been granted." Campaign group Strife, Stop the Rail Freight Exchange, has objected to the proposal since 2006, arguing it would be a loss to the Green Belt. Founder Cathy Bolshaw said, "We all knew this day would come at some point. The planning consent is valid for 5 years, so they had to do something. We're very sorry to hear that they've made a start on some works. The timing is impeccable when there are no sitting MPs. The local plan is still under consultation, so they want to be seen to be making a stand so the land can't be turned into housing. All is not lost, because they still don't own a piece of land that they need in the middle of the site, and they still don't know whether it can be connected to the railway line." Malcolm Mark from Knapsbury Park Residents Association has also been fighting the proposal since 2006. "I think it's ridiculous," he said. "They don't own the land. The whole thing is just nonsensical."
Hello, I'm Sue, and my first news item is Sparkies urge gym buddies to move for Movember. A local electrical company has teamed up with a St Albans gym to raise money for the Movember charity. Green Electrical will host the fundraising event at Nuffield Health and Fitness in St Albans between 12 noon and 5 p.m. on Saturday, November the 30th. People from the local community will undertake the Move for Movember challenge, which involves running or walking 60 kilometres on a running machine and donating in the process. Movember is a leading global charity which is dedicated to combating men's health issues such as prostate cancer, testicular cancer and suicide. The 60 kilometre represents the 60 men lost to suicide worldwide every hour. Members of Nuffield St Albans will also donate a minimum of £10 for every 1 kilometre they complete. Green Electrical owners Martha and Paul Caulfield have organised the event due to their personal associations with the Movember charity. Martha said, "This charity is close to our hearts, as Paul, my husband, lost his dad 20 years ago this month to cancer. He felt it was the perfect way to honour his memory. I personally have lost a close family friend to suicide. We also feel that men's health has been something that people have generally been quite closed about, and it's now being talked about so much more. This is a great way to open it up to people and get people talking and making sure it's not such a taboo subject anymore. We're also donating proceeds from our jobs through November to the charity and asking customers, friends, family member and anyone else who knows us to donate. Green Electrical is also donating £5 for every booking they take throughout November. Additionally, men participating in Movember also grow moustaches throughout November to raise awareness and funds for men's health." Martha added, The other thing to mention is Paul has also grown a moustache, which represents Movember. It's amazing how many people are asking him about it, and again, a great opening conversation to talk about the event.
Compliments of the season to you all from Mel Dunn. West Hart's hospital campaigners reach fundraising targets for judicial review. Campaigners for a new hospital central to St Albans, Watford and Decorum have met their £20,000 fundraising target to mount a judicial review against the NHS bosses. The new hospital campaign, NHC, began their legal action after Hart Valley's Clinical Commissioning Group, known as the HVCCG, and the West Hart's Hospital Trust, WWHT, stated their preferred option to renovate existing hospitals rather than build a new one. After being given a £350 million spending limit by the government, plans to spend the bulk of the money on Watford General, with smaller renovations made at St Albans City and Hemel Hempstead hospitals, were agreed. Eddie Glatter of the NHC said, "We'd like to thank all the local community for their huge support and generosity and everyone who has helped spread the word. You've made it possible for us to reach yet another milestone following the boost we got a few weeks ago when a judge granted us permission to bring the case, which is all only about to be given one in five claims, and it's also set a cap on our possible costs. It's essential that the local health bodies now run a full and fair consultation, including taking a serious look at a building of a new hospital on a clear site that everyone in West Hertfordshire can get to. It's the only way our local hospital provision can be transferred, as it truly needs to, because it is in a far worse condition than most other areas. The money was raised through a crowdfunding campaign, with nearly £10,000 donated online and the rest through direct payments to the NHG's bank account. Campaigners have pointed to other trusts which are promoting building a new hospital as a serious option, such as the Princess Alexandra's Hospital Trust in Harlow. The NHC and their lawyers are now waiting for the date of the full hearing, which will depend on how busy the High Court is, and may be several months away. An additional £50 million from the government was recently made available to West Harts, but the HVCCG said the extra money was still not enough to consider building a new hospital. The funding is also a loan, not a grant, meaning millions of pounds will have to be paid back every year.
Hello, I'm Deborah, and my first article is entitled "Woman Raises Money for Hospice with Kilimanjaro Challenge Effort." A St Albans woman with a fear of heights attempted to climb Africa's highest peak to raise money for a hospice. Adeline Daly has raised £7,822 with her friend Sabine Schwabisch for Helen and Douglas House Children's Hospice in Oxford. She described the seven-day trek through wet, snow and very cold conditions as one of the biggest physical challenges of her life. Adeline said, "We climbed Kilimanjaro in aid of Helen and Douglas House, a children's hospice in Oxford. I am petrified of heights. Little did I know I would have to battle through three miserable days of rain before we got there. Unfortunately, the cold got the better of me, and just 100 metres from the summit, after 8 hours of trekking, the guides took the decision to take me off the mountain. Overall, it was an epic experience, and we definitely earned every penny we raised for a fantastic cause." Adeline's friend Sabine has been a learning disability nurse at Helen and Douglas House for 7 years. She said, "I decided to do Kilimanjaro because it really pushed me out of my comfort zone while offering an achievable goal if I trained very hard. Achieving this for our children and families is a privilege and will stay with us, all of us, forever." One of the trekkers, Mike Illingworth, is the father of twin boys called Ben and Ollie, who were cared for by Helen and Douglas House. Both boys were born with a life-shortening condition, a metabolism disorder which causes significant neurological symptoms. Sadly, Ben passed away in October 2012, shortly before his 10th birthday, and Ollie then died in May 2018 at the age of 15. Mike said, "I wanted to climb Kilimanjaro for the hospice in memory of my sons Ben and Ollie, to give something back for all the great work they did for my family and all the families who rely on the service they provide. Thanks to the generosity of all the people who have supported me in this trek, this helped push me on, as well as supporting the charity in these difficult financial times."
Attention, Please. New film sheds light on childhood developmental difficulties. Andrea Thornton's documentary, Attention, Please, takes a look at children with behavioural and emotional issues and suggests an alternative which doesn't involve years of medication. Focusing on the stories of a handful of families, she explores how an alternative, drug-free therapy became a turning point in their children's lives and led to an understanding of the underlying causes of their learning, behavioural and emotional issues. Andrea looks into how primitive reflexes, automatic instinctive reactions which help a baby survive, but which should only be active for its first year of life, can act as a barrier to normal development of the central nervous system if they are retained. This means that the central nervous system continues to function at an immature level, and this can result not only in learning difficulties, but also in behavioural and emotional issues. Children with dyslexia, dyspraxia, ADD, ADHD, anxiety, and those on the autistic spectrum are often found to be developmentally delayed. In a very personal account, St Albans mum Sandy Denyer reveals her own experiences with the treatment, which culminated in her changing careers and training under Bob Allen. I've spent the last 20 years working as a physical therapist, and time and again I'd noticed patterns of postural imbalance that seemed to go hand in hand with certain personality traits. I always felt there had to be a link, but despite spending most of my working life in healthcare in various guises, I couldn't find any explanation that made any sense. A few years ago, I was recommended to Bob for help with some behavioural issues one of my children was having, and that's when the penny dropped. It was retained primitive reflexes I'd been witnessing all these years. As my son went through Bob's programme, it became apparent my whole family had retained primitive reflexes manifesting in different ways. Bob refers to this as the family tsunami, which is a great term, as you can see it rippling through families and presenting in many different ways. You can have one family member a bit of a bull in a china shop, whilst another is very shy and fearful. Yet it's the same reflex presenting in different ways. Consequently, we all went through the programme, which I can honestly say has been a hugely liberating experience. The underlying anxiety that had accompanied me most of my life had disappeared, and I was left with a feeling of finally being comfortable in my own skin. You don't fully appreciate you're not comfortable until you are. I think the biggest gift it has given my children, apart from helping them with their ability to learn, is an inner confidence, not only with their peer group, but in any situation they find themselves in. Obviously, once I'd found the missing link, I persuaded Bob to train me, and now it's really fantastic to be able to help people of all ages overcome many diverse issues and become truly comfortable in their own skin.
Now, Tula, the cat, is looking for a new home. This is accompanied by a beautiful picture of Tula, who is a lovely tabby. I'm Tula, a 9-year-old girl. I came to the centre as my previous owner sadly passed away. I'd always lived in the same home and have found it hard settling into cattery life. I used to spend most of the day hiding, but am now spending more time out and about. I can be shy with new people, but the staff and volunteers here have been spending lots of time with me to help me come out of my shell. Once I know you, I like to sit on your lap for a cuddle. I love to be groomed, and my favourite treat is a dreamy. I'm looking for an experienced, patient owner who will take time to get to know me and let me settle in at my own pace. I'll need a quiet home with adults or families with children aged 14 and over, but no other pets, please, as they scare me. Once I've settled into my new home, I'd like access to the outdoors so I can sunbathe. If you could be that special person to offer Tula a loving home, you can ring 0208 950 0177, option 2, to arrange a visit.
Whose house will be crowned season's finest for lights? St Albans neighbours are competing to display the best Christmas lights in aid of a homeless charity. For the last 6 years, residents of Alexandra, Inkerman, Bedford and Armour Roads have taken part in an annual competition to raise money for local causes. Competitors donate a minimum of £5 per house to charity in exchange for the chance to be crowned the winner, raising £500 for Open Door last year. Previous contests have been seen across these historic streets and have transformed and festive decorations, plus you might have even spotted penguins adorning rooftops, and the winning property was actually turned into a gingerbread house. Last year, around 70 different houses took part across the four streets, and there'll be mince pies, mulled wine and hot chocolate available when you visit. This year, all proceeds raised will be going to St Albans Action for Homeless to help those with efforts in filling services in the supporting homeless people when resources are stretched, including distributing food on a Friday and Saturday nights and connecting homeless people with addiction supporting services. The competition will begin on Sunday, December the 1st, with a winner announced following a period of judging by local children who have completed a trail of the streets. The winning house will receive a Warner's holiday voucher donated by one of the residents and a trophy they'll keep for the following year. Organiser Lizzie Singer said it would be great to have other St Albans residents visit us and to get into the festive spirit and help us raise as much as possible for our chosen charity. It's a really nice community thing to do. It's not difficult, and you can hear people say they come especially down the roads to see what's happening each year. Come along throughout the month and you can donate via the charity donation tins or the Everbright link, which can be found on posters nearby. The lights will be available to view throughout the Christmas period and donations will be accepted in buckets online.
Charity raises thousands for music therapy in memory of much-missed dad, Harry Krish. A charity ball held in memory of a St Albans dad has raised more than £6,500 for music therapy for seriously ill children. Harry Krish Mutasamy was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer a week after his 39th birthday and died 7 months later in 2014. His sister, Anna Ruby Yates, set up the Harry Krish Mutasamy Foundation in his memory 2 years ago, pairing his love for music with his love for his three young children, who were all under the age of five when he died. Since then, the charity has raised thousands of pounds to provide ill children with music therapy, as well as raising awareness of pancreatic cancer. A fundraising ball was held at St Michael's Manor last month to mark the fifth anniversary of Harry Krish's death and the second anniversary of the charity's launch. Tickets sold out almost immediately and family and friends gathered to enjoy food and entertainment with performances by Adam the Magician, Mauritian Seeger Dancers and Baby Mama Funk. Local businesses, as well as some in London and Brighton, also donated prizes for a silent auction. The ball raised £6,500 in total, which will be used to offer music therapy grants to children's hospices or charities which support children with life-limiting or life-threatening diseases. Harry Krish was passionate about music and was the lead singer in band The Kid Gloves with his school friends from St Columba's College and Loretto. The charity has previously funded one-to-one music sessions in hospices and for ill children being cared for at home, as well as small group music therapy, percussion workshops and a song production day for teenagers with cancer. The money raised from the ball is enough for at least three music therapy grants. Anna Ruby said, "The family and the charity is very grateful to St Michael's Manor and those who donated time, talent, effort, prizes or money and to everyone who joined them and helped make it such a memorable night of fundraising and celebrating and remembering Harry Krish." And the charity is also holding an 80s disco on January the 31st at the Old Albanians Rugby Club.
Significant pressures cause County Council's financial overspend. Figure was originally reported as £7 million. Hertfordshire County Council is heading for an overspend by the end of the financial year, it has emerged. The County Council, whose services include schools, social services, highways, public health and waste, had a gross revenue budget of £975 million for the 12 months from April 2019. But significant pressures, particularly relating to the increasing costs of social care provision, mean the council is expected to overspend by the end of March. The projected overspend has been reported to be as high as £7 million, and that figure had been published as part of the council's ongoing budget-setting consultation, Your Priorities, which has been running since September. But now the council has amended its consultation document because they believe the overspend will now be significantly less. They say the initial figure was based on figures from the first quarter, April to June. and although the figures for July to September won't be publicly available until December, they expect them to be significantly lower. A spokesperson for the County Council said a significant amount of work had been undertaken to reduce the projected overspend. And she said an updated financial position would be reported to a meeting of the Cabinet on December the 16th. The £7 million refers to the County Council's projected overspend for the current financial year and was correct at the time of publication, she said. In common with other local authorities, the County Council is facing significant pressures, particularly around frontline social care services. However, it has a strong, long track record of financial management. The County Council reviews its position regularly to ensure it continues to provide essential frontline services to residents. An update of its latest financial position will be presented to Cabinet in December 2019, reflecting a significant amount of work undertaken over recent months to reduce this forecasted overspend.
Nurse Bonnie is honoured for her work. A nurse who helps people who have been trafficked into the country to work in the sex trade has won an award. Bonnie Sparks, aged 39, is a safeguarding nurse for West Hertfordshire Hospital's NHS Trust, supporting potential victims of trafficking and slavery. She qualified as a nurse 20 years ago and helps protect vulnerable and hard-to-reach women by joining police on operations to contact those who need vital healthcare support. For her efforts, she's been named Nurse of the Year at this year's Nursing Times Awards. She said, "I became a nurse because I wanted to help people. This work, with the support of the safeguarding team, makes a difference and delivers something positive. The partnership between the Trust and the police began in 2018, and Miss Sparks hopes this type of cooperation will spread nationally across the NHS. The Trust's chief nurse, Tracy Carter, said, "We are enormously proud of Bonnie and the work she has delivered with the nurse safeguarding team. Her work has truly helped the most vulnerable women to gain access to healthcare. She is a worthy winner of this award."
Crackdown on certain items left on graves in cemeteries. Cemetery bosses in St Albans are clamping down on items that are left on graves by vowing to remove anything breakable or dangerous. Visitors to the council's cemeteries often bring ornaments, pot plants, or even solar lights to leave on the graves of their loved ones. However, council officials say the items left behind, particularly breakable items, can pose a danger to all the visitors and staff, and it's understood that certain cemetery workers have been injured by flying pieces of broken glass when using strimmers around the graves. Now it has been made clear in the revised Cemeteries Information and Regulations that items made of glass, pottery, tin or plastic will be removed without notice. Ban also extends to garden hooks, bricks, blocks, wire mesh or plastic fences. The document also states that any other items not banned from the cemetery must be placed within the permitted area and not on walkways or other nearby graves. This move is said to have followed complaints of tributes overflowing into adjoining plots or blocking walkways between graves. However, the document also makes it clear that informal items will be allowed on children's graves as long as they are suitably maintained and do not obstruct maintenance. If cemetery staff do spot something that is broken on a child's grave, they'll photograph it and write to the family before taking anything away. The document says graves within the children's area may be adorned with informal items such as balloons, flags and decorative items as long as they are placed within and do not extend beyond the boundary of the plot. The decorative items will only be removed by the council if they obstruct the maintenance of the cemetery or are not suitably maintained. The revised Cemetery Regulations Act were considered by St Albans District Council's Community, Environment and Sport Scrutiny Committee earlier this month. Councillor Chair Annie Brewster said, "Finding something removed from one's relatives' graves can be hugely disturbing, so I applaud the open door approach there is at the Hatfield Road office so advice can be sought in advance."
Funding boost for hospital campaign. Hospital campaigners have raised enough money to take a decision to invest millions of pounds into Watford General Hospital's Court. The New Hospital Campaign, or NHC, which has been calling for a brand new hospital rather than refurbishment at Watford, needed to raise £20,000 to mount a judicial review against Hearts Valleys Clinical Commissioning Group, or HVCCG. The campaigners claim that HVCCG and West Hearts Hospital NHS Trust, WHHT, did not hold a full consultation before choosing to retain A&E facilities in Watford and spending the bulk of a £350 million investment in the town's hospital. In September, the government announced that WHHT would receive a £400 million investment to improve its facilities. The NHC want a new central location for a hospital that is more accessible to patients in St Albans and Hemel Hempstead, as well as Watford. Despite NHS bosses choosing not to go down this route, the campaigners have not given up and are now awaiting a date at the High Court for a full hearing after raising £20,000. Edie Glatter of the NHC said, "We would like to thank the local community for their huge support and generosity, and everyone who has helped to spread the word. You have made it possible for us to reach yet another milestone, following the boost we got a few weeks ago when a judge granted us permission to bring the case. It is essential that the local health bodies now run a full and fair consultation, including taking a serious look at building a new hospital on a clear site that everyone in West Hertfordshire can get to. It is the only way our local hospital provision can be transformed, as it truly needs to be, because it is in a far worse condition than that of most other areas." A spokeswoman for Hearts Valleys CCG said, "We at Hearts Valleys CCG, together with colleagues at West Hearts Hospitals Trust, are very pleased with the recent announcement of funding for plans to carry out extensive redevelopment of current hospital facilities. Further details are awaited, and we are also defending the judicial review claim brought by a group of local campaigners."
This is for the shoebox appeal. A St Albans woman is asking for your help to spread festive cheer this Christmas. Operation Secret Santa is collecting shoeboxes filled with gifts. The boxes will be given to charities St Albans and Hartsmere Women's Refuge, the Trussell Trust Food Bank, Centre 33, Emmaus and Open Door for people they support to open on Christmas Day. Founder Aisha Kayat said, "I love the idea of giving gifts at Christmas and putting a smile on the face of someone who might not otherwise be able to afford to buy these things for themselves. If each person donates just one shoebox, we could make sure that everyone in Hertfordshire has a gift on Christmas Day. The boxes need to be wrapped in Christmas paper and filled with gifts such as clothing, toys, toiletries, gift vouchers and sweets."
Mum with leukaemia to be honoured at charity awards. A St Albans mum with leukaemia has been shortlisted for an award for her campaigning work for more stem cell donors from Black, Asian and minority ethnic communities, known as BAME. Meena Kumari Sharma, who was diagnosed with leukaemia in 2018, has been shortlisted for the BAME Advocate of the Year Award at the Anthony Nolan Supporters Awards. Since her diagnosis, Meena, who's 42 and the mother of twins, has campaigned to raise awareness of the needs for more stem cell donors from ethnic minorities, while also searching for her own life-saving match. Meena was told that she would need a stem cell transplant to survive. Although a matching donor was initially found in Korea, this fell through and the search began again. After deciding to take matters into their own hands, Meena and her family set up a Match for Meena in October last year to find a donor for herself and for others in the same situation. Meena added, "The campaign was born out of pure desperation. All I kept thinking was, I haven't had enough time with my children. It's such a private matter, and to go so public was difficult, but I didn't expect the responses it had. The outlook seemed so bleak, but once we started the campaign, I met so many good people and it created hope that we could find someone." The campaign has now registered 5,000 people to be international stem cell registered. "I felt if I don't make it, there will be at least a worthwhile reason for someone else. If I could find someone else to match, it would have been worth it all. I don't want anyone to suffer like I have to." Meena's acute myeloid leukaemia has now downgraded to chronic myeloid leukaemia, which is stable, and she's working to rebuild her strength before undergoing further treatment. Anthony Nolan's chief executive, Henry Broward, said, "Meena has truly gone above and beyond to raise awareness of the need for more people on the stem cell register while herself receiving treatment. We want to extend a huge congratulations to her and look forward to celebrating with her at all the awards." The awards ceremony will be held today, at the Tower of London.
Pond, River and Abbey. We're now coming to the end of our current batch of images loaned to us from the Ewart Hopkins collection. First up is a view down a deserted French row, alongside a scene of St Albans Abbey from the River Vire, complete with grazing cows. Then we have a picture of Harpenden Pond and a shot of St Albans Abbey. Do you have albums of photographs showing the St Albans district in times gone by? We're looking to borrow photos taken in and around St Albans at any point before the 1990s, especially those which show recognisable buildings and landmarks, even if they've changed over time. If you'd like to contribute, please email us your images as JPEG attachments of at least 200 DPI with full details, including dates they were believed to have been taken, to heartsad@archant.co.uk. You can also bring in photos to be scanned while you wait.
A student from Marlborough Science Academy has triumphed in the local round of the National Rotary Young Chef Competition. The competition at Oaklands College was judged by Peter Knight, executive chef of the Jury's Inn hotel chain, and Paul Wood, a lecturer in catering at the college. The competitors were challenged to cook a two-course meal for two in 90 minutes with a budget of £15. Year 9 Jessica Hardcastle won with a caramelised red onion and rocket tartlet to start, and a duck breast with port and sherry sauce for her main course. Alison Kuehl, food preparation and nutrition teacher at Marlborough, said of her pupil, "She's a really hard-working, fantastic young lady who loves cooking. She was delighted to win. She didn't expect to." Second place in the competition, which was organised by the Rotary Club of St Albans Verulamium, went to Iona Bolton of St Albans High School for Girls, and third place went to Libby Key, also from Marlborough. And there's a lovely picture of a smiling Jessica hard at work in the kitchen.
Santa's sleigh. A new sleigh will be taken to the streets of Harpenden's as part of the Round Table's annual Christmas charity tour. Santa will be doing it in style, with a brand new sleigh replacing the one that has been used for the past 12 years, complete with GPS, tracking, and be able to take credit card payments. The sleigh will be doing its round weekdays from December the 2nd between 7 to 8:45pm and at weekends from 4:30 to 6:30pm. Matt Hall, the chair of the Harpenden Round Table, said, "What really motivates the volunteers to come out each cold December evening is the reception from the local community. The reaction from children is fantastic, where they just wave from their bedroom windows or come outside to say hello. It's great to see the smiles on their faces." This year, Santa's sleigh ride will be raising money with a focus on the issue of child homelessness. Donations will be split between two local charities, Hearts Youth Homeless and Park, as well as UNICEF.
A medieval murder mystery event in St Albans raised £6,200 for a charity which helps families in need. Home Start Hearts hosted a three-course dinner and murder mystery party at St Michael's Manor with the help of actors from Moneypenny Productions. Guests dressed up as knights and ladies, kings, queens, monks, peasants and a court jester, with each table solving the murder as a team by interrogating the actors and studying props and clues provided. There was also an auction, with prizes ranging from a case of champagne to an Aston Martin factory experience. Homestart Hearts strategic manager Susie Moody said, "Everyone put so much effort into their costumes and they looked fantastic. It's important to us not only to raise as much as we can so we can support more families that are at breaking point, but to also make sure guests have a really enjoyable and entertaining night out."
Here are our choices for your radio listening as we move into December with the festive season and an election on the horizon. As ever, we begin with those programmes serialised during Monday to Friday. The Book of the Week at 9:45am on Radio 4 and repeated at 12:30am is Stalingrad, Destiny of a Novel by Catherine Merridale. Vasily Grossman wrote to Stalin in 1950 pleading for assistance in bringing his novel Stalingrad to print. He didn't receive a reply. Although the book was published 2 years later, it was subject to endless interference from the Soviet authorities. The 15-minute drama at 10:45am on Radio 4 and repeated at 7:45pm is a continuation of George Eliot's Middlemarch. The composer of the week at noon on Radio 3 is Leos Janáček. 12:04 p.m. on Radio 4 and repeated at 10:45 p.m, Grandmothers by Sally Vickers continues from last week. From Wednesday to Friday at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4, you can hear three more episodes of Curious Under the Stars, the comedy drama about the landlords of a pub in a mysterious village by the Welsh coast. In Tune is at 5 p.m. on Radio 3, giving us arts-related chat and live performance, followed at 7 p.m. by In Tune Mixtape, an eclectic non-stop mix of music. Each night at 8 p.m. on Classic FM, the Full Works concert brings you 2 hours of much-loved seasonal classics. And now here are my choices of individual programmes starting on Saturday, the 30th of November, with part one of the dramatisation of Stalingrad, the novel by Vasily Grossman, which is the subject of the Book of the Week. It is at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4 and boasts a starry cast led by Kenneth Branagh, Greta Scacchi and Mark Bonnar. The Opera on 3, on Radio 3 at 6:30 p.m, is Don Quixote by Massenet. Radio 4 Extra at 7 p.m. is the place for listening to Les, an appreciation of the late, great Les Dawson. Gather around the piano with Tom Adele at 9 p.m. on Radio 2, when the role of the piano in popular music is considered. Or you can go to Radio 4, also at 9 p.m, for Dickens Confidential, a drama by Anne Caulfield. Charles Dickens, with his journalist hat on, is investigating Victorian landlords.
Sunday the 1st of December sees part two of Stalingrad at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. The first of the seasonal events is The Service for Advent with Carols at 3 p.m. on Radio 3. It comes from the Chapel of St John's College, Cambridge. Keeping with Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m, Toby Jones is Hans Andersen in Dance Till You Bleed, The World According to Hans Andersen. This is a dramatisation of five of his interlinked fairy tales. 9 p.m. on Radio 2 sees Rod Stewart celebrating 90 years of the record label Decca in Decca's Top 20. Also at 9 p.m, but on Classic FM, this week's editions of Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Classical Music explores the range of classical music anniversaries to fall in December. Programmes for Monday the 2nd of December start at 9 a.m. on Radio 4 with Start the Week, which is looking at various aspects of the British rule of India. The 2:15 p.m. drama on Radio 4 is part one of Massachusetts Avenue, an environmental thriller. The new series of quote unquote follows at 3 p.m, still on Radio 4. The evergreen I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue is at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. While on Radio 4 Extra at 7 p.m, you can enter The Enchanting World of Hinge and Bracket, followed at 7:30 p.m. by Dad's Army. The Blues Show with Kerris Matthews is at 9 p.m. on Radio 2. The Art of Now, Batter, Batter, Boom, looks at the world of creating noisemaking at 9 p.m. on Radio 4.
We start Tuesday the 30th of December with a sideways look at the election, when at 9 a.m, Tim Harford's More or Less election special considers the numbers and stats being discussed in relation to the election. It's repeated at 9:30 p.m. Still on the subject of the election, Sultans of Swing at 11 a.m. on Radio 4 discovers the pressure to regulate political pollsters. Today's Art of Now at 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4 is Innovisions, a report on how touch screen technology creates new opportunities for visually impaired musicians. The second part of Massachusetts Avenue is at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. And in Great Lives at 4:30 p.m. on Radio 4, Peter Osborne nominates William Brown, hero of the Just William books, and his creator, Richard Crompton. A Touch of Gentle Humour is provided at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4 by Tom Wigglesworth's Hang Ups. Jamie Callum's Jazz Show is at 9 p.m. on Radio 2. A treat for late-night listeners can be heard at 11 p.m. on Radio 4 when Michael Frayn's Pocket Playhouse serves up satirical comedy with a starry cast including Ian McKellen, Joanna Lumley, Martin Jarvis and Alexander Jennings.
The first programme chosen for Wednesday the 4th of December is Lem Sisse's Social Enterprise at 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4. The poet, author and broadcaster reflects on charity, social enterprise and people. An evening of contrasts can be found on Radio 4 Extra, starting at 6:30 p.m. with The Palace of Laughter, which visits the nation's variety halls. This is followed at 7 p.m. by Hancock's Half Hour. You can listen with Les, 30 minutes with Les Dawson at 7:30 p.m. and then New Creative Dramas at 8 p.m. The Secret Story of Curry is at 8:30 p.m. and you can take An American Road Trip with Laura Barton at 9 p.m. Mark Radcliffe has his regular folk show at 9 p.m. on Radio 2. A 9 a.m. start on Radio 4 for Thursday the 5th of December brings you Listeners Week at In Our Time, when Melvin Bragg chooses listeners' suggestions for topics only revealed on the day. There's an opera matinee at 2 p.m. on Radio 3, when Ponchielli's La Gioconda is performed in Barcelona's Gran Teatre del Liceu. You can find out about The Secret Life of Pigeons in Open Country at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. Another entertaining evening is on offer on Radio 4 Extra. Starting at 6:30 p.m. when Great Lives has a profile of the comedian Dave Allen. The Ken Dodd Show follows at 7 p.m. and I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again is at 7:30 p.m. Two new creative dramas are at 8 p.m. and at 8:30 p.m. a tribute to Martin Luther King entitled I Have a Dream. A short story by Alistair Gray is at 9 p.m. and at 9:15 p.m. A History of Paper is a story of a love affair when a man sifts through a box of papers, triggering memories. Bob Harris's Country Show is at 9 p.m. on Radio 2. Friday, the 6th of December, brings Early Morning Drama on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. when David Tennant stars in an adaptation of Robert Louis Stevenson's novella Ebb Tide. The afternoon concert on Radio 3 at 2 p.m. has a programme featuring music depicting enchanted Finnish forests, a voyage down the Rhine, an English springtime, and wintry Russian landscapes. A satirical look at the week's news is provided by The Now Show at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. Friday night is, as usual, music night on Radio 2 at 8 p.m. This week it's a 1980s special, with artistes joining the BBC Concert Orchestra, performing songs which landed them in the upper reaches of the charts. I hope these choices bring a warm glow to the dark days of winter.
This is Rupert Evershed reading my monthly nature notes for the Hearts ad. The Wood Wide Web. In 1986, when I was embarking awkwardly on my teen years, Prince Charles declared that he spoke to plants and trees and that they responded. We all laughed and the tabloids enjoyed the free gift of ridicule labelling him the Potty Prince. But years on, as scientific understanding has deepened, in many ways, literally, what lies beneath a tree has been uncovered, and with that an emerging concept of what might be called the language of trees. Now, of course, scientists are not talking about trees turning out to be people, after all. Akin to the ancient and mythical Ents of J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings epic, even Tolkien, with his wild imagination, separated the Ents from real trees. Although he did allow for trees to slowly transition to Ents, and vice versa. Instead, scientists are finding that much of the language used to talk about humans can be employed to describe the way trees live and operate together. The key to this emerging world of tree talk is actually something that you may well have noticed if you have walked in the woods recently. Fungi. It has been a good year for these flowers of the forest, and on my walks I have come across a huge variety of beautiful and subtly hued fungi of all shapes and sizes. Sadly, this abundance has also attracted commercial foragers, who have hit the headlines after ruthlessly exploiting Epping Forest for its fungal hoard. Fungi are most often associated with damp, rotting conditions, and it is easy to overlook the fact that they are living organisms themselves, occupying their own taxonomic kingdom, not quite plants and not quite animals. It seems entirely appropriate that these plant animals should be the organisms that bridge the gap between the world of trees and humans. They do this through vast underground fibrous networks that connect to and work with the roots of trees and plants. These mycorrhizal fungi are made up of tiny strands of fungal growth, just 1/100th of a millimetre in diameter, and as such invisible to the naked eye. And yet these tiny filaments can extend thousands of times further than a tree's roots, connecting trees across vast areas in what some scientists have termed the wood-wide web. Some have speculated that these unseen networks may in fact cover entire continents. The fungi's relationship with the tree is symbiotic, the fungi drawing carbohydrates for growth from the tree, and in return providing an extended supply network of water and nutrients for the tree. These relationships can be quite complex, with some networks connecting only trees of the same species, while others connect many different species. This connectivity allows trees to communicate, or talk if you like, and relate to each other in forest communities. Molecular signalling through the mycorrhizal strands, hyphae, provide trees with early warning systems, alerting them to threat and inducing in them a response to ward off that threat. If one tree is being attacked by an insect, the other trees can produce chemicals to attract the right predator to eat the attacker. Trees have even been shown to divert resources in order to heal and strengthen a sick or distressed tree. We are all familiar with the idea that plants and trees respond to warmth, water and light, but scientists have shown that some trees respond to scent and sound too. This has led the German forester Peter Vollenben to make the case for forests being social networks in his book The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate. He talks of communities of friends and foes, working together in families of parents and children, and yes, talking and communicating to better their long-term survival. So next time you're out in the woods and stumble across some fungi, remember that you are just looking at the tip of an iceberg. They are all little indicators of a vast and complex world beneath the soil, sustaining the wood and connecting it as a whole. Of course, if you feel like it, you could give a tree a hug, but the chances are it has already heard you coming.
Hi, this is Peter Burley, bringing you a preview of Christmassy events, but you'll just have to pretend I'm wearing my Santa hat and a ride in a sleigh. But as I say, we've got a Christmassy-themed month's worth of entertainment coming up for you. And I will start, fairly obviously, with the pantomimes. Now, I think I've mentioned a couple last month, but for completeness, let's round them all up together. And the first one is Steeping Beauty, and that's being performed at the Auburn Arena, and it runs from the 6th of December through to the 5th of January. And it stars Andy Day from CBeebies and Rita Simons from EastEnders. And there's a battery, as ever, of different prices, dates and times, and I really won't run through them all, but on about a third of the days, there's a morning matinee at 10:30 in the morning. The other third of the days, there is there are afternoon performances at either 1:30, 2 or 3 o'clock. And then every day there's a late afternoon or evening performance at either 5, 6 or 7 o'clock. And the prices are going to vary according to which performance, which day, etc., etc. And they range between £15 and £30, with £2.50 off for concessionary tickets. Then in Harpenden Public Halls, from Saturday the 6th to Monday the 30th of December, you have Beauty and the Beast. And it says here that on the 23rd of December, the 10:30 a.m. performance is a relaxed stroke signed performance. Now, tickets are going to be £14 down to £12. On most days, there's a performance at 10 a.m. On several days, there's a performance at 2:30 p.m. And on some days, there's a performance at 6 p.m. But there's only one performance per day, whatever time it is. But say across nearly a month's worth of dates, that's a fair spread of performances and times. Now, at the Abbey Theatre, we have George's Marvellous Medicine. And this is a pantomime adapted from a Roald Dahl story. And it says, George lives on a ramshackle old farm with his parents. Life is already hectic, but it gets worse when his appalling grandma comes to stay, etc., etc. That's being performed, all performances on the main stage. And it starts on the 14th of December. And then it's being performed on the 15th. Not the next few days, and it picks up again on the 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Then there's a break, and then it's on the 27th, 28th and 29th. Now, there's at least one performance, obviously, every day. The 14th, it's 2:30 and 5:30. 15th, 2:30 and 5:30. 20th of December, 7:30 p.m. only. 21st, 2:30 and 5:30. 22nd, 2:30, 5:30. On the 23rd and 27th, it's 7:30 p.m. only. And the last 2 days, the 28th and 29th, it's 2:30 and 5:30 p.m. I'm afraid I haven't, as ever, got the audio description date because they don't print that in their programme anymore. But I'm sure there will be one if you contact them to find out. Now, there's also a pantomime on, but two performances, but one day only, at the Sandpit Theatre at Sandringham School. And this is going to be on the 21st of December at 11:30 a.m. and then again at 2:30 p.m. Tickets are going to be £8 or £6. And the pantomime is called Reindeer on the Roof. And it's Christmas morning and Darcy wakes up to a sparkly tree, a stocking full of presents and a reindeer on the roof. It's a magical Christmas show, obviously all about Christmas and presents and a hapless reindeer. Now, far more serious stuff. Let's move across to the cathedral. On Sunday the 15th of December at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there's the Hospice of St Francis Carol Concert. This is a particularly fine concert fundraising for the hospice. Tickets for that are £12 and they're available in advance from the Cathedral box office. Then on Friday the 20th and Sunday the 22nd of December, both days 7:30 p.m, you've got the Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols. Admission is by ticket only and you'll need to move fast. It's by ballot. Then on Saturday the 21st of December from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, there's their ever popular Carols on the Hour performance. Now, there's obviously the regular church services, but the other actual performance or concert in the Abbey runs us right through to the New Year concert. So at 7 p.m. on Wednesday the 1st of January, we've got the St Albans Symphony Orchestra forming a concert of works by Berlioz, Mozart, Strauss, Beethoven and another Strauss. It's a concert of classical favourites. Ticket prices start at £28 and work their way down to £8. Now, other musical events, again, mostly with a Christmassy theme. On Tuesday, the 17th of December at 7:30 p.m, we have a Christmas carol concert given by the Harpenden Choral Society, and that's going to be in the High Street Methodist Church in Harpenden. I think I've got that right. I got my churches mixed up last month, I'm told. Now, 16th of December, we have the Harding Choir, and they're performing Music for Christmas Past and Present, inspired by the Middle Ages, and with a selection of festive readings and seasonal refreshments. Now, that is going to be the 16th of December, 8 o'clock. The concert's called Winter Wakeneth, and it's in St John's Church, Harpenden. Now, this is the one I got wrong last time, so I'm not going to say any more than St John's Church, Harpenden, because I think I got it mixed up with St Nicholas Church, Harpenden. This is in St John's Church. Now, we have some opera for you on Friday, the 20th of December. It's, I say opera, it's performed by an opera company. It's Sacred Songs for Christmas. It's at 7:30 p.m. and it's in St Lawrence Church, at St Lawrence. And tickets for that are going to be £15 or £5 if you're under 18, and you get a complimentary drink on arrival. And that's being performed by the Felici Opera Company. Now, there's jazz, which may or may not have a festive theme. No, it does have a festive theme. Here we go. We've got two jazz concerts at the Maltings. The first is on the 15th of December with the Danny Moss Quartet, and the second is on the 22nd of December with Stan Tracy's Under Milk Wood and a Child's Christmas in Wales Suites. So there's two pieces of jazz inspired by themes from Dylan Thomas. Now, as ever, doors open at 7 p.m, the music starts at 7:30 p.m, and tickets, regular tickets, are £13 or £12 for the concessions. Now, on the 23rd of December, we have a concert in the Harpenden Public Halls, and this is being given by the Lee Singers, and it's entitled Festive Lee, spelt L-E-A at the end. And it's going to be an evening of uplifting singing and carols. It will start at 7:30 p.m. and it will cost you, I'm afraid, £15. Now, let's switch back to the very few other events we've got, because people seem to be taking a bit of a break after Christmas and New Year. But back in the Alban Arena, after they cleared up from the pantomime, they start again with their season of events on Friday, the 10th of January, and that's going to be a tribute show to the band Queen entitled One Night of Queen. It's Friday the 10th, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £22. Saturday the 11th of January, 7:30 p.m, we have another tribute concert, Back to Bacharach, which is obviously a concert of Burt Bacharach's music. Tickets for that are £23 down to £20.50. And finally, we have Soul Town USA, and that's on Sunday the 12th of January at 7:30 p.m, all tickets £23. And then we have one event stroke concert at the Abbey Theatre in 2020, and that is on the 9th of January at 8 p.m. It's on the main stage, and it's a jazz concert, Stage in Concert. Stage is the St Albans Jazz Ensemble. Now, I have realised, as I'm working through, I have managed to leave one behind, and it's a gospel choir performance whose date I can't remember. It's at St Saviour's Church. So if you're into gospel music, it was a very good Christmassy-themed gospel choir concert. Many apologies, I've left the flyer at home and not managed to include it in my script. Other events to bring you back with a bump to reality after you've got used to it being 2020. We've got one lecture by the St Albans Architectural and Archaeological Society, and that's going to be on Tuesday the 14th of January, 7:45, Marlborough Road Methodist Church, and it's on Thomas Ward Blagg, and it's been given by Simon Langsdale. His significance is that Blagg was town clerk of St Albans for 47 years, during which he presided over one of the most serious cases of parliamentary corruption and embezzlement ever known. And this is a study of how he got into that position and how he exploited it, and for so many years. And then lastly, a little intriguing one I noticed, Thursday the 9th of January, the Locomotive Club of Great Britain has a talk at the Cavalier Hall. It's the United Reformed Church Hall in Chiswell Green, and it's going to be on two new railways for London, and it's been given by Chris Green, who was the former chief executive of Intercity. Now, the meetings start at 7:30. Visitors are welcome. The reason I've drawn it to your attention is, firstly, I'm slightly intrigued. One new railway is obviously going to be the Elizabeth line, and that's going to be really, really useful for us. Get the train for St Albans, and at Farringdon, you'll be able to change easily and conveniently to a whole host of stations running through the city and the West End. And that should be a real benefit to all of us who have to travel into London. The second one, I'm just going to guess that it's going to be HS2. And that is going to be interesting and controversial, even if I fear not that many of us will be in a position to be using it for a very long time. But anyway, I will leave you with that locomotive thought to buoy you up and wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
I'm delighted to welcome to the studio today Emily Perra, who is probably the youngest guest I've ever had in the studio. I'm delighted that her mother's here with her, Claudia. And Emily's going to tell us all about her experience, her recent experience on the West End stage. But we're going to go back first, because to get into the theatre, you have to have wanted to do acting, wanted to do dancing. Yeah. Tell us how you started. Where did you start?
Well, when I was little, I'd go back to Italy and I'd do little performances in front of my family. And I just really enjoyed it. Like me, my sister and my cousin, we'd always just do these little shows. And that sort of got me into performing. So then I joined Stage Arts, which, yeah, was my theatre school, which I still go to, actually.
And that's in St Albans?
Yeah, based in St Albans, but it's also in three other places as well.
Okay. And what sort of things do you do there? What's that? Is it teaching you stagecraft or acting or dancing or
what? It's singing, acting and dancing. So we do an hour of each one.
The skills that you're learning.
Yeah.
Do you also create productions which are performed?
Yes, we do a Christmas show and a summer show. Like the Christmas show is a bit smaller and it's just like in a school. But the summer one we do in a theatre in Welling.
Okay, so then you do this and you go to more than one stage school still at the moment. You're involved in other ones?
Well, yes. Yeah, so I go to Stage Arts for singing, acting and dancing, the three. But I also do dance outside of Stage Arts. So I go to SASA School of Arts, which was originally Living the Dream, but then it got passed over to someone else and they changed it to SASA. But I started it when it was Living the Dream. And I just do street dance there. And then I also go to the dance studio where I do ballet, tap, point and acro.
What is street dance?
So it's sort of hip-hop, pop music and stuff.
And all of this got you to a situation where somebody noticed you when they were looking for young people for a cast, a West End cast?
Well, with Stage Arts, I got to audition for an agency and I got into that agency. The agency's AM Kids Agency, and Adele, which is the agent, she would give me auditions. And I did a few auditions before that and I got into some adverts and a documentary for National Geographic. And then I got this audition, which actually I wasn't going to do in the first place because I was in the middle of doing Panto in St Albans. And that one day it got cancelled. And so at first we thought we couldn't do the audition, but then it got cancelled. And we thought, that's a coincidence. That's a bit lucky. I think that's a sign that I should be doing this audition. I went to the audition, but I'd only been told about it the night before or something. So I wasn't really quite sure because I had to sing in Spanish. I had to learn some things in Spanish and I didn't speak Spanish because I'm Italian. It's similar, so I did get it all right, but it was a bit hard and I wasn't really able to learn it. So for the audition, I had a script. Everyone else knew it and I was sort of just there with my script, oh no, sorry. So during the singing, because the singing was the first bit, so we sang it as a group a few times and I was a bit unsure on how to pronounce things, but I managed all right. And then we sang it on our own, but I didn't really think that they could see my true potential because I hadn't really learnt that much yet. But then we moved on to the dancing and I'm quite a keen dancer. And so I think they started to notice me a bit when I started doing the dancing because I could tell they were a bit disappointed that I was a bit unsure with the singing. When we got to the dancing bit, they started to notice me and they were like, oh, she might be good.
Did you know at that stage what it was you were rehearsing for? I mean, you knew it was singing and dancing.
I wasn't actually sure what I was going to do in the audition. I got words as a script for acting as well. So I assumed, yeah, we'd be doing that. I just didn't know how we were going to do it, if you get what I'm trying to say.
Indeed. And so you got through that audition. So, and was that it? You were then
booked? After we did the dancing, a few of the people got sent out because they hadn't got through to the next bit. So I was lucky to have stayed because I wasn't really sure at the start. Then we got into the acting. And again, I sort of knew the words, but I didn't want to mess up. So I stuck with my script. But because I'd passed on to the next audition, they just wanted to see me doing the acting. And when we auditioned, they got it videoed so they could look back on it. So anyway, after that audition was done, we got sent back into the room where our parents were. And a woman came up to my mum and she was, make sure Emily knows her words next time. So then a few months later, I got a recall. This time I did know what I was doing and I was prepared.
How difficult was it waiting in those months? That was quite a long time to wait. You just forget it, you did it and that's it.
Yeah, I sort of forgot about it for a bit. I was like, oh yeah, I got through. But I had Panto to think about and school and stuff because I was missing a bit of school.
Yeah, a bit, yes.
But then I got the recall. I learnt my lines this time and we got sent into a room on our own. And this time we got to meet the boys because there was a young Emilio as well. And I did that. think I did really well on that because then I got chosen to be in the musical.
That's fantastic. Now let's go to what this musical is, because it is a it is a musical. It was to be on the West End stage in London. You were going to have to sing.
Yeah, sing, act and dance.
Play a guitar?
Not exactly play a guitar, but I had to pretend to play a guitar because like Gloria playing
because
guitar.
Because the musical is called...
On Your Feet. It's the story of Gloria Estefan and Emilio Estefan, and Get On Your Feet is one of Gloria's songs. I think it pretty much sums up what it is, because it's just getting everyone on their feet and dancing, because it's like a really good feel-good musical. There are some sad bits and it's quite moving, but it's just quite a feel-good musical, and at the end it just gets everyone on their feet to like dance.
Gloria Estefan's a Cuban-American singer, so it's very lively, very Cuban. It was likely to be a success, and it's been in Broadway, it's been all around the country, I think. I'm not sure, probably all over the world by now.
Yes, it was in Broadway, and then they brought it to Holland. Then they brought it to the UK, and at the moment they're doing a UK tour. And then I think next year they're going to bring it to Singapore as well.
You were in it in the West End.
Yeah.
Did you start? It started somewhere else in England first, and Leicester or somewhere like that.
Oh, yeah.
Did you go there? You were there first?
So like we started doing the rehearsals for the musical in Leicester, and we did shows there for about 2 weeks.
And you didn't have to go to school all the time?
For rehearsals, I'd go to school Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Wednesday evening, we would go to St Pancras, and we'd all meet there, the six kids.
Three girls, three boys.
And two chaperones. And then we take the train to Leicester every Wednesday and come back on Sunday.
So you could fit school in?
Yeah. Oh,
this is Loretto College, right?
Yeah,
that's right. It's in St Albans.
Then we went on Britain's Got Talent, you know, in the like semi-finals, and there's some breaks where like people come on just to perform. Well, the cast of On Your Feet went on Britain's Got Talent to promote the show, and we did a part from the show, which is at the end, the mega mix.
Let's try to explain to our listeners that
you're
in a story about a woman who became a very successful singer, Cuban-American singer, and her husband. The story's about them and her roots in Cuba?
Well, she started off in Cuba, but the story's actually set in Miami because that's where, like, she grew up.
And you play the young Gloria. And does the musical, does it go backwards and forwards between childhood and...
So, like, it started right during her world tour and then it goes right back to when she was younger. And then from there...
That's when you appear for the first time.
Yeah, and then from there, then it's just her growing up.
Were you therefore there at the beginning and that was it and you were finished? Or did you keep coming in and out?
So I did two numbers in the first act, but they ran through to each other, so...
Were you on your own?
Well, for the first one, yes, I was on my own.
Pretending to play a guitar.
Yeah, and I was singing. And then it cut to a bit because her father was a soldier in the war in Vietnam. Yeah, right. And he was like listening to me on this recording. I'm not sure what
sort
it was.
Tape, I expect, in those days.
Yeah. And then from that, it goes to me listening to him replying to me. And then there's this guy and he's like, come on, Gloria, sing. And in the story, I wanted to sing, but I knew I should be doing the washing because that's what my mum had told me to do. Then I started singing and then my mum comes on and she's like, what are you doing? Then she goes shopping and then I start doing my other number. So they kind of like run into each other. And then in act two, near the end, so she was in a bus crash and during her operation, because she damaged her back, there was this little scene where she was in a dream and she met with her younger self, her father who died and her grandma who'd also died. That's a really touching number, actually.
Yeah. So that was where you were then performing with the lead star.
Yeah. And then right at the end, when it's the mega mix, all the main roles got their own little bit to sing.
How was it? Exciting?
Yeah.
Quite hard work?
It didn't really feel like work because I was having fun, but... I mean, yeah, it was quite hard work, like trying to remember where I was and just meeting the cast. And I was a bit nervous, like, oh, I've got to make a good first impression.
And how were they with you?
Oh, they were really nice, yeah. They were really, like, welcoming to us, so that was nice.
Some of them have probably been through this themselves.
Yeah.
And it's very dynamic as a performance. I mean, you had to pretend to play the guitar in the beginning, but then you had to dance as well.
Yeah.
Dancing was obviously a key part of this because it's a musical, it's a stage, it's about movement.
But what I mostly did singing, to be honest, a bit of dancing, a scene where I was doing acting, but like mostly singing. I mean, you're always acting when you're on stage, like with your facial expressions, even when you're singing.
What was it like on the stage with all the spotlights and a lot of people out there?
I thought it'd be nerve-wracking. Even on Britain's Got Talent, I thought it'd be nerve-wracking. But for some reason, I wasn't nervous because I was just like really happy to be doing what I was doing. And I don't know, it didn't really feel like there were people watching me. It just kind of felt natural, like I was just performing like in front of my family back when I was little again.
And then in between, when you're not on stage, you're backstage.
Yeah, in the dressing rooms, playing Foursquare back in the dressing rooms with the chaperones.
And can you hear the performance going on in the dressing room?
Yeah, we had like a little speaker and also give us our call when we needed to go backstage.
Yeah. Do you find it difficult switching in and out? You're in character on stage, then you're off there in the back playing games in a dressing room, and then you switch back in again?
After my second number, because they like run into each other, I have to get changed into my second outfit, which is the one from towards the end of Act 2. But we just get changed because we didn't want to run out of time in Act 2. Yeah. And then we'd go into the boys' room because that's where they usually were. And then after a while, there'd be the interval and then they'd be like, Young Glorious, your call to stage, Young Glory to the stage. And then I'd go backstage.
And this was through the summer, last summer, summer of 2019. You didn't do every performance. There were sort of three girls playing the Young Gloria.
So, yeah, I just did like
Young Estefan. So
third of the performances.
Some of them ended quite late, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get back home to St. Albans at about midnight, one, something like that. I mean, it was all right because I didn't have school the next day because it was the summer holidays. And like, I did get breaks during the week where I didn't have to go in. Sometimes I'd have to be there because I was on standby. I was there just in case anything happened, which was a bit tiring having to go there and then, you know, just playing and chatting and stuff and then coming back and I didn't actually do anything. Yeah, sometimes I would get a break and I'd just relax.
Did you get much help from the director? There was presumably a dance director and there was an overall director, a musical director and various other people. Did they help you very much too? Do you think you learnt a lot?
Yeah, I think I did actually.
What sort of things do you think you learned? Not been on that sort of a stage in that sort of a performance before, so that was a new experience. Though you've done lots of acting, lots of dancing.
Oh yeah. I mean, to be honest, my chaperones taught me quite a lot.
About what?
I don't know, just like being a bit, I'm not really sure.
Well, it's difficult for you.
It's hard to think about it, but I feel like I've gained something from it. I just can't put it in words.
You were in a situation which was completely different from what you would normally be in, although you've done lots and lots of different sorts of theatre. So it's a different feeling, isn't it? It's a different time. What are you going to do next?
I'm going to keep getting like auditions from my agent, but I mean, I'm not sure like what's going to come, to be honest. If something good comes and I get through, then I guess I'm doing that. Performing is fun and I would like to take it as a career. It's just not very reliable as a source of income. I'm going to keep it to the side, although I will like still carry on doing it. And then if anything comes, like I'll focus on my studies, but if anything comes with that and then I get big, then that's great. But that's not what my sole focus is going to be, because school's important as well.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Good luck with your career. Good luck with your schoolwork as well.
Thank you.
Peter mentioned in his entertainment guide a gospel choir concert that is being held at St Saviour's Church in St Albans. We now have some further information about this performance. It is being held on Saturday, the 21st of December, at 8 p.m. The Powerhouse Gospel Choir, the Just Sing Choir, and the Radlett Can Sing Choir will be performing at the concert. Tickets can be obtained online by visiting www.ticketsource.uk/ssaviours or by telephone 01727 851526. The December 2019 edition of Primary has now come to an end.